Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take for Sunday, May 10th, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. We are in the final week of the legislative session, and truth be told, there's still a lot of work to get done. A deal on HCMC is imminent, but it's getting more and more complicated between the House and the Senate, between the method of finding relief for the hospital. On Friday, we saw news that Sanford Health will merge in North Memorial and the Maple Grove Hospital into their operations. Expect some pushback from labor unions and maybe even Attorney General Keith Ellison. It's Mother's Day, and I want to say happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. I don't know if you get enough credit throughout the week or the day or the year, but I want you to soak up today. Many of you know that I was raised by a single mom, Bev. She passed a while back, but I think of her every day. But on Mother's Day, I think about how she treasured her grandkids. And by the way, she would have been a good critic of this show on a weekly basis. As we get ready for the last week of the session, we're getting closer to convention season. Matt Little won the Congressional District 2 endorsement, but we're going to have a primary there as Matt Klein and Kayla Berg, state senator and state representative, respectively, said that they will run in a primary. That means turnout in CD2 for the primary will be stronger. That may help Angie Craig. As we look ahead, the week ahead, we'll have updates 6:20 with Vanita every day. And of course, next Sunday, we'll have a Sunday Take just before the session ends. When we come back, an extended conversation with Republican U.S. Senate candidate Michelle Tafoya. Michelle used to work here at WCCO. She's a longtime sideline reporter, and I'd been hoping to have her on the show. You'll see that we cover foreign policy, Donald Trump, the Minnesota Republican Party, and why she wants to serve. When we come back, Michelle Tafoya. You're listening to News Talk 830 W.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
CCO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest this week is Michelle Tafoya. You have known her for years in a different context, but now she is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. She's running as a Republican, and I'm so happy she's joining me on Sunday Take. Michelle, long time that we've been on CCO on and off together. This is a little different context, so welcome to Sunday Take.
Good morning. It's great to be with you. It is different, isn't it, for both of us?
For both of us. So let's just start. You know, your name had come up for years as somebody who might be interested in running for office. Why step into the arena at this time? Why decide you want to run for the U.S. Senate?
I love this country and I love Minnesota and I see it in big, big trouble. And, you know, both, frankly. And I feel like there's so much worth saving here in Minnesota. I see people leaving, families who are fifth, sixth generation Minnesotans leaving, businesses leaving, education, which used to be a crown jewel of Minnesota, declining, fraud. And so if there was ever a time to jump into the fray and put my energies and my time and my passion into something that's bigger than me, now is the time. I see the future of this state. I want it to be for my kids what it has been for their parents, for us. And so I'm ready to put everything into this.
Washington is not necessarily highly functional at times.
That's an understatement.
Well, yeah, no, you know, it's Sunday morning. I try not to make people spit out their coffee too quick. But just talk to me about what you can do for Minnesota from Washington if you're elected to the U.S. Senate.
Number one is represent them better. Listen, we've had Democrats in the Senate for years and years, and things aren't going very well for Minnesotans, whether it's from the neglect of the feds or it's the dysfunction in St. Paul. The first thing is to get a Republican elected who can represent those conservative values that are honestly practiced and favored all over this state. All over this state. If you live in the cities, you may not notice it as much, but I travel to Rochester, Duluth, Winona, Sleepy Eye, you name it. And these people aren't happy and they want representation. So I think it starts with that. And it starts with hanging on to that majority in the Senate that is so pivotal for keeping this country safe, whether it's in the world or just from within.
When you think about the issues that you would want to dig into in the Senate, what are the issues that you have the most passion for?
Number one is the fraud. And it's got to start from the top. This cleaning out of the fraud has got to start from the top. And I am amped and ready to join Ted Cruz from Texas, Mike Lee from Utah, and Ashley Moody from Florida and sign on and be a co-sponsor of the Deporting Fraudsters Act, which says if you're here as a guest of America and you defraud Americans, you're gone. And you do not have a way back. I think that is so important. We have been taken advantage of, and never has that been more clear than what we see in Minnesota. And we're going to see it everywhere. But Minnesota is the epicenter of this fraud. It needs to stop. This is everyone's money. It's yours, Blois. It's mine. It's every listener's money. Taxpayer money that the United States federal government said, you know, we can help some programs around the country. And then the people who were supposed to steward and shepherd that money into the right places, they were either completely negligent or complicit in the crime. It's got to end. We have a massive federal deficit. We have a massive debt. We have a number of needs that aren't being met. And instead, criminals are walking away with the money. It's got to stop.
When you think beyond that, there's a certain, you know, you're on the campaign trail now. If you're elected, you're going to serve. Having been in and around Washington for 30 years, it is either a grind. There's fundraising, there's committee hearings, there's policy. What policies or policy areas are you most curious about? For instance, when you're not on the air, you're not talking to people, what do you read about? What makes your brain really curious about, you know, what you could do in DC?
National security and international relations. And I know that sounds kind of foreign, no pun intended. But the thing is it is driving so much of our policy decision making right now, and it should continue to do that. I look at China, and I've looked at the relationship between China and the U.S. I've studied it. I've looked at it. I've been a big proponent of moving manufacturing back onshore here in America. And we are getting amazing investments from all over the world bringing jobs back to Minnesota. I want to see that continue. I want to see us not have to rely on a hostile adversary. You can call them whatever you want to call China, whether they're competitors, whether they're adversaries, whether they're hostile. Look, no matter what you call them, I don't think we can trust them. And I don't want to have to rely on medicines from China. I don't want to have to rely on food from China. I don't want to have to rely on technology from China. We've got brilliant minds here at home who can produce these things, who can protect these things. And that is a big part of the reason I'm running.
Let's dig into the foreign policy, you know, discussion of today, the Middle East, our war with Iran. What's your view on it? How long should it go? Is it a short-term sacrifice, or do you think this is a reset of the whole dynamic in the Middle East?
So 47 years ago, some of us are old enough. I was a kid, but I remember my parents looking at this revolution happening in Iran. And I remember actually being in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl parade as a little girl, and there were people protesting the Shah of Iran. And that was right before this happened. I had no idea what it meant. I just remember that term, the Shah. And I remember my parents talking about it. So that was a long time ago. And since then, the blood of thousands of Americans are in the hands of the Iranians and the Iranian regime. Not the Iranian people, the Iranian regime. This should have been handled long before now. And so here we are. We're dealing with a regime that says, hey, we don't have a missile that we can fire long enough to harm anyone. Really? You just shot one 2,500 miles. That could hit a lot of places. This is a regime that calls Israel the little Satan and America the great Satan. And if you don't think they're serious, do a little investigation into Hamas, the Houthis, Hezbollah, and find out why they are the biggest state, why Iran is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism on the planet. They don't like the West. They hate Israel. They hate us. They tell us that all the time. And I know Iranians who have moved there to Minnesota. I've met a number of them along this campaign. One, her father was murdered by the Iranian regime. And when those folks were blown up early in this conflict, she and her mom were dancing in their living room, crying together, saying, finally, justice. I know people that know the market, that there are 90 million people in Iran who want freedom. The very, very small percentage are happy with what they've got over there. And so it would open a marketplace. We see now the Middle East shifting a little bit toward, you know what? Iran is a cancer here. We don't want this anymore. We don't want this adversary. I think this is one of the most important moves a president has made in modern history. I want to see it through. Now, look, the president promised us this wasn't going to be a forever war. And so far, it hasn't been. And I believe he's surrounded by really good minds, Marco Rubio being one of them. And I think that we've got to wait and let see where this lands. But if it's up to me, I want this problem solved. I want this thing finished. I don't want the mullahs in power there. I want those people in Iran to be able to take their country back, and I want peace in the Middle East.
You brought up President Trump. You called, you said this isn't a forever war yet, and I think that's a fair assessment. Look, there's been this kind of ability for this president to, as somebody said to me recently, it's not the why, it's the how. Many people agree with the why we're doing things, but when he starts to lose popularity, it's the how he's doing things. And he campaigned on no forever wars. You've brought up international relations. Are there places where you feel as though a voice from Minnesota being refreshing, different from outside the political sphere, could carry either the president's policies or more conservative policies to Minnesota better than Republicans have for 20 years in Minnesota?
I am a really optimistic person who believes in the promise of America. And I am the daughter of an immigrant family. My dad was one of 11 kids. Two of them died very young. He was the only one of the 9 remaining kids who went to college. He became an aerospace engineer. And quite frankly, my mom was probably smarter than my dad was. I think she got him through calculus at Berkeley, but they met at Berkeley, believe it or not. That was pre-free speech movement Berkeley. And he ended up working in the aerospace industry. The other 8 siblings of his didn't go to college, but they managed to have really good lives because they worked in the trades. They did whatever they could do, and they worked really, really hard. And I've worked really, really hard since I was 10 years old. I think my first job was like watering my neighbor's lawns and plants and feeding their pets while they were on vacation. And I haven't stopped since. And I noticed that a lot of people say this, but I believe it's true because I've lived it. The harder I work, the luckier I get. And I never had an entree into television or radio. I just put myself out there. I dealt with the blows. I dealt with the setbacks. I dealt with initially, many years ago, what's a woman doing in sports? To now you see women all over sports. I dealt with that. I dealt with angry coaches at halftime. I dealt with players who didn't want to see a reporter after a game. I dealt with all of this. And you can say, oh, that's sports. It's nothing. you know what, when you're in it and you're doing that job for a purpose for Sunday night football or Monday night football, and you're living up to John Madden, Al Michaels standards, Hall of Famers, you are working your tail off. So from the time I was 10 to now, I'm not going to enumerate every job I've ever had, but I have not stopped working. And I believe in work as it's a value. It's something that I think brings dignity to everyone, no matter what your job is. So I bring an optimism to this race that I want people to glom onto. I want to tell people, no, this is not about the oppressors versus oppressed. This is about America being able to work together, being able to be the land of opportunity. And it still is, and it always will be, if we steward it properly. And I want to bring that optimism to Washington. And I want to develop relationships across the aisle. And I just want to bring that, you know, that Minnesota willing to work. I travel this state and people work so hard. And unfortunately, here in Minnesota, they see a lot of their money being stolen right from under, out from under them. And they are pissed. And they have the right to be. They're still driving over potholes. They're still seeing test scores go down, and they see their money being wasted. It takes work when you get to Washington. I'm not going there to sit in an office. I'm going there to work, and I hope to set an example while I'm there.
My guest is Michelle Tafoya. She's a candidate for U.S. Senate. She's running as a Republican. Michelle, as you do go through the political process, we're a caucus state, so you're out at conventions. I have said over the years, and I was someone attracted to politics because I got extra credit for going to caucus in high school in civics. And I went to my first caucus for my extra credit.
You actually
credit.
Had a civics class in high school? It'd be nice if they did that again, boys. Do they have those today?
They still do, but I think there's a little different curriculum than maybe I got in Minnesota. But that's, so I went to a caucus, and granted, I was a little too into politics, even that age, but it was a conversation in our community. Yet you look at the process, and I joke that you can guarantee that every beautiful Saturday in the spring will be the Saturday that every Minnesotan wants to be outside. And those who choose to be in a gym or a cafeteria to endorse, that doesn't necessarily reflect Minnesota. What have you seen through this process, and how do you bring what you see in those settings out to all Republicans or all Minnesotans if you're on the ballot in August?
Well, listen, I used to really not like this process because, like you, I think it isn't representative of the mom who has to work three jobs to keep everything afloat. Can't necessarily be a delegate. But at the same time, these are devoted people. They're people who love Minnesota. They're people who want to see good things happen. I have been really enjoying this process of getting to know so many of these people and talking to them and making delegate calls. It's not just the meetings. It's the calls whenever I have a free 10 minutes. I'm on the phone calling delegates. You hear them and you understand what their concerns are. So it's important to hear all of that. At the same time, I talk to a lot of people who are not part of that process, who are not familiar with it, who some don't even know it exists. And they have their own concerns and they've got things on their mind too. But I think what we can all agree on is that there is common ground. And one of the biggest pieces of that real estate, that common ground real estate, is getting people elected who will represent conservatives. We haven't been able to elect anyone statewide. You are well aware of this since 2006, Norm Coleman. Mm-hmm. That's 20 years. Why is that? What has gone wrong? And how do we change it? And I'm really proud, I got to tell you, to have Rudy Boschwitz, the great senator from Minnesota, in my corner. The man is remarkable. He and his wife, both in their 90s, both still active, both supporting me. It's an honor. And we talk about this all the time, that this is an important process, but there is so much common ground, and we've got to focus on that. I think that when we focus on a litmus test or, you know, one tiny part of our platform that isn't representative of all the things that most Minnesotans, 60% of Minnesotans agree on, we do ourselves a disservice. I think I am the most electable candidate in this race. And that's the first thing, is getting someone across the finish line in November. I want to be that person.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, Michelle.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on News Talk 830 WCCO. This is Sunday Take. This week's guest is Michelle Tafoya. She's running for the U.S. Senate. She joins me now. We're talking about kind of being the most electable. You know, I like to think about my neighbors, and I have told stories before about when Trump was first elected in 2016. I had a neighbor across the street in St. Louis Park, and we were golfing the Saturday after, and he's a little younger and young family, and he said, "So, what do you think about the election?" And I said, "I think people are frustrated. They're mad. They didn't like Hillary, and they elected President Trump." We're only on the second fairway, and this isn't somebody I'd ever talked politics with. And I said, "What do you think?" He's like, and he was almost a little bashful about it. He goes, "We voted for Trump." And I'm like, "Tell me why. I need to learn." He's like, "Well, da 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 da, and taxes and costs." And then he said, "But you know, when we had that event or barbecue in your backyard, you know, people were kind of talking, and we just didn't feel like we could talk because we just didn't want to, you know, ruin the barbecue with politics." And I looked at him and I said, "You have my garage code. If I wasn't home and my kids needed a house to go to, I would trust them to go to your house. We are neighbors. And the idea that you have never talked about this is just something that I think we have to change. You know, your neighborhood, your community has shifted over time. It has gone from, I'll call it, pink Republican to a little brighter blue DFL. Why do you think that is, and what do Republicans need to do to get neighborhoods like yours back so that they really understand that the Republican Party can appeal to them?"
Well, I think that we haven't, quite frankly, put electable people that are a little more, dare I say, mainstream on the ballot for them to vote for. We have scared a lot of soccer moms with some social policies. And we've seen how that's worked out. We saw it in stark relief when Scott Jensen was the gubernatorial candidate and someone had a clip of him saying what he said about banning abortion. And it really, that was the beginning of the end for that candidacy. And I believe that people want their social lives sort of out of this mix. They want to focus on the economy, education, crime, fraud, really important things that impact their day-to-day lives. So I think that that's something where we just need to moderate a little bit, not a lot, on these issues. Certainly when we've had a trifecta in St. Paul, we have seen some of these issues go way, 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 way left. We're going to see how that impacts things in this November's election. Do people feel that they still have a home there with the party lurching as far to the left as it has? I've been talking to people who don't feel they have a home in the DFL anymore. So I'm going to be curious to see what they decide to do. We've got a lot of independents in this state that we need to appeal to. And it's not just appealing to them. It's being honest with them about where we stand on these issues. And so I think that's what I represent. I'm a mom of two. My husband has a small business. I've lived in Minnesota for 33 years and watched as things have gone slowly and then all at once sort of downhill. And I don't think people are happy with the way that things are in Minnesota right now. That's not the feedback I get. So people are looking for a change agent. And I think that they'll see that I am that.
You brought up a woman's right to choose. What's your position on that? And how does that play into the conversations you have with Republicans throughout this process?
Yeah. Well, I want to point out, first of all, I'm running for a federal office, United States Senate. This issue was, after Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Dobbs decision, is now a state's issue. And I think that people are, you know, Republicans, conservatives are very unhappy with the direction that the state has gone. I don't think that I can influence that very much from the Senate, but what I have told people, and I believe this firmly, is that your taxpayer dollars should not go to funding abortion. I would say that with a lot of issues. Taxpayer funds don't belong there, and I will vote against taxpayer-funded abortion. I will also continue to vote for conservative judges at every level. I think we've seen that some of these far-left liberal judges have let some of the most heinous criminals back on our streets in Minnesota. I don't think parents like that. I don't care what side of the aisle or right down the middle you are, you want safe streets for your children. If your child's been murdered or raped or, you know, any of these violent crimes, and you see a judge go easy on that person, you don't want that for your kids. You don't want that for your neighborhoods. You don't want that for any neighborhood in Minnesota. So that is where I am on that issue. And, you know, to the extent that I can affect it from a federal level, again, it's about no taxpayer funds being used for abortion and confirming conservative judges.
You know that if you get through the August primary, you're in a general election, even maybe before that, that, you know, outside groups, Democrats, are going to connect you to President Trump. President mm-hmm. Trump's not popular in Minnesota. He, you know, hasn't won the state. And, you know, this is a national issue, but in Minnesota, it's particularly pointed. How do you differentiate yourself from the president? How do you make a case when that's what they're going to try to do to you?
I probably wouldn't debate theology with the Pope. And I'll start there. You know, look, I know that most people are don't like his style. And that's fine. That's fine. But there are some of his results that I do like. I do like that our border is more secure than it was. And that problem isn't over. We know for a fact that terrorists got through that open border, and there, whatever the number is, even if it's 1,000, we know what kind of damage one lone wolf terrorist can do. And if there are 1,000 of them in this country, I'd like to make sure that we find those people and deport them immediately, get them out of the country. So I'm very much with him on border security. On immigration, I would like to see immigration resolved in a way that makes things clearer and more fair for those people trying to come here illegally, and enforcing for those who are trying to come here illegally. And yeah, sometimes that's going to mean deporting. That's called enforcement of our border laws. So there are things that he and I agree on policy-wise. There are two more years of this administration. I think, you know, we're already seeing people run for president in 2028. If I'm elected to the Senate, I'm going to be there for 6 years. So it's going to be a very a different time. And I am an independent thinker. I represent myself and Minnesota. That's what I represent.
As we wrap here, some of the other things, you've been in Minnesota, I think as a native, I think if you've been here 30 years, you're one of us by now, Michelle, just for the record.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. You know, that's a common joke around here, but I think it's fair. You brought up Scott Jensen in 2022. You know, I'll call out one of your Republican opponents, Royce White, in the last election, just being one of those outlier candidates. There's a lot of people who want to over-amplify those outlier issues, the issues of, you know, voting integrity, things like that. What do you say to those people when they want you to be louder about those issues? Or how do you avoid the noise that people want to create around issues that most Minnesotans aren't thinking about every day?
So if I heard your question correctly, your premise is that voter integrity is not a mainstream issue. Is that what you believe?
I think that when people say, well, when the president says he won Minnesota, I think, you know, that's pretty clear. And I do believe most Minnesotans, the vast majority, trust Minnesota's elections. And so when people say that Minnesota elections are not trustworthy as a whole, I kind of wonder if that's on the minds of mainstream Minnesotans, like the economy or like schools, et cetera. And
Well,
so
go
I'm
ahead.
just curious where you stand on that, and is that something that should be debated as loudly as education or crime or foreign policy?
You know, it's interesting. It's I when the phrase was coined, it's the economy stupid. Who knew that that phrase would persist for years and years? But it really comes down to people's pocketbooks first and foremost. And I'm thrilled to see so many countries investing in the United States of America and bringing dollars back here. And you know, we're trying to make the boogeyman out of AI. Let's hold off on that. Let's have those robust debates about AI and about data centers. If we want the internet to be as fast as everyone wants it to be, we're going to need data centers. So the economy is number one, I think, for everyone. Where does voter fraud or voter rolls or where does that rank? You know, listen, I talked to a lot of people. I just came from a meeting where people were talking about it, and they wonder why our Secretary of State won't turn the voter rolls over to the Department of Justice. What they wonder why dead people aren't taken off the voter rolls. How does that negatively impact voter integrity if you take someone who's passed away off the voter rolls? Those are some interesting questions that I think are worth our time. Whether those are the burning top questions, I think remains to be seen. I think it's the economy. I think it's jobs. I think it's affordability. I think it's taxes. And I think we are way overtaxed in Minnesota. And people are feeling that even more sharply right now because they see where their tax money's going. It's leaving the country in suitcases. And people are upset about that. And they deserve to be. They're embarrassed. They know that Minnesota is getting all of this national, I would even say worldwide attention because of the fraud. Is it the only state? No, but this has sort of been, you know, the epicenter of the fraud in this country is in Minnesota. You know, a guy named Nick Shirley in his 20s comes here with an iPhone and exposes the Learing Center. And now you can't turn on national television without hearing a reference to the Learing Center. So I think when people see their tax bills and then they see that, and they see that kids who were supposed to be getting fed through Feeding Our Future weren't, and criminals were taking the money. When they see that Medicaid has been ripped off and they see their tax bills, that doesn't add up and it shouldn't add up. And I think that is a massive issue. We've got businesses leaving. We've got entrepreneurs deciding, you know what, this Minnesota is not friendly to business. I have talked to countless business owners, whether it's a CEO or a small business, who say, Michelle, I've got one foot in Minnesota and the other one's in South Dakota. And if things don't go well in November, I'm pulling out everything and I'm going to South Dakota. We've seen an exodus of at least $1 billion of our tax base go to Florida, Texas, Arizona, Nashville, you name it, South Carolina. They're leaving because they feel like they're not wanted here. They feel like they're punished for having success. There's a huge retail outlet. I'm not going to reveal the name or the person that I spoke to who said, I started with 300 employees. I took the risk. I invested. I risked everything. I went through tough times to build my company. And now I employ 15,000 people, but I'm being told I'm the bad guy. So I think that we really have to open up our eyes and understand that this departure of business is real and it's not going to help anyone. We've got to get a friendlier business climate here if we want to maintain and grow our businesses.
Michelle Tafoya, I know we'll talk down the line. You'll get your invites to the primary and general election debate if you make it through the primary, and I look forward to staying in touch through your campaign. Thanks for joining me.
Blois, thank you very much.
When we come back, this week's take.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. This week's take applies to the partisans and the banter that they have. It's become more and more common that the inter-party battles do not show up in public. On a flight this week, I listened to a podcast where Jon Favreau, a longtime Obama advisor, challenged Ken Martin, former Minnesota, now DNC chair, about Martin's term, about fundraising, about the autopsy of the 2024 race. And Martin queried back very effectively. You should listen to that. I'll have a link in the newsletter Monday. But One of the things that we also saw this week on the Senate floor was Democrats pushing back against Democrats on an issue related to mandates in senior care. It's an issue I work on, so full disclosure there, but it was enlightening to see and refreshing to see pushback against one's own party. It's not something we've seen much here the last few years. In fact, the trifecta switched the dynamic. More and more legislators are just not engaging, but they're using content. Axios has a piece this weekend. It'll be in the Sunday Send today. They make their own content. They talk to their own people, and therefore independent voters or voters who don't agree with them are not the audience. We're seeing this more and more. And as Democrats haven't done it, Republicans haven't done it either. We haven't seen Republicans push back hard against President Trump. And when they do, as we saw in Indiana this week, they lose primaries. So political survivability is one of the reasons. And so with a week left of the legislative session, may there be a Democrat in the Senate or a Democrat or a Republican in the House that challenges their own party on an issue that they just don't agree with, even though there may be political consequences. And if there are disagreements, may they be debated in public so that the public can see the public officials have these debates rather than have it dealt with behind closed doors in caucus. That's my hope as we go through this year in Congress and at home. That's the Sunday Take for this week. I'll be with Vanita 6:20 Monday through Thursday. You can always check out our work at thedailyagenda.com. I'm Blaise Olson. Corzo's up next.
I'm Dr. Hrini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.